When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Cobras and Fire. This week, we're talking about the greatest year in rock. They say hindsight is 2020. So let's do a complete 360, jump in the hot tub time machine, and go back 24 years to 1996.
It's been a month or two since I've been sleeping with you. I'm coming home again.
Welcome to Cobras and Fire. My name is Baco, and I am joined by the formative Loose Cannon. Hello, Loose. How are you this afternoon?
Baco, you had me at hello.
Oh, that's nice.
You didn't even say it, and you had me.
I did actually say hello.
No, I don't think you did. At least think he asked me how I was doing.
I said, hello, Loose. How are you this afternoon?
I don't know. I missed it. I'm not really paying attention to pleasantries, but I am doing great, and I am... I am excited to talk about the greatest year in rock, 1996.
Yes? Show me the money! For some reason, I'm stuck on movies, and we're here to talk about music, but we'll do a little bit of both, I suppose.
Yeah, we're going to talk about a little bit of everything, man. It's that's what these are all about, going back in the little time machine, you know?
And it's a lot of work to put these together, right? I mean, but it's still fun.
I had to Google 1996. I had to send you two links that said facts about 1996. It was definitely more work than we've ever put into any episode.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, except for the last one we did.
Oh, yeah. The other greatest year in rock, right?
Yeah, no doubt. Why don't we get into a little bit? Remind me, what was going on in 1996? What were the hot news items? What kind of stuff was the world dealing with?
Well, sure. I mean, I think the most important thing, just to get it out of the way, is this is the first year that Ask Jeeves, the search site, was live.
Yeah, you still use it, correct?
I do.
I was always a savvy search guy.
Oh, okay. Well,
maybe web crawler.
There's nothing like an online butler. I love it. Ask Jeeves was live. It was a big competitor. It was taking Netscape by storm. You had the first clone sheep, Dolly. Was out there. I'm not sure if you remember the clone fanatics of that time, but do you know why? A little fun fact. Do you know why that sheep was named Dolly?
I do not.
That's because the scientists are complete perverts, and they took the DNA from a mammary gland, so it was named after Dolly Parton, the bus.
Oh.
No joke. Not a joke. These are facts.
For you, Toomey. And supposedly Red Bull was a thing for the first time then. I don't know that. I'm not sure when I first became aware of Red Bull. I think it was maybe later, but fuck, the shit tastes like, you know, poison anyway.
I can't believe it. I mean, Red Bull, you talk about, it, you know, the salesman for Red Bull, whoever said, let's combine this with vodka, is that zone of when you would go out and be like, I'd like a mixed drink, I'd like a vodka and tonic. That'll be $5. I'd like a Red Bull and vodka. That's 10. Okay, no problem. That was the big upcharge. But you talk about depression and just nothing but a caffeine Did you have Red Bull and vodka nights? Because I had many.
Never had Red Bull with mixed with anything. No, I've had it. It needs to be. I've had it straight, and I don't think I was able to get more than one sip down. The fact that that is something people. You pay a fairly premium price compared to other or soft drinks or whatever. That people actually buy that and ingest that after tasting it is unreal. But of course, we also have chewing tobacco. I got some, the cost of certain things from 1996, like I want to do. Sure. You want me to hammer through those?
Of course.
Well, you're not going to believe this, man. Apparently, I quit snorting Coke at the wrong time because a gram of Coke in 96 was only 17 cents.
17 apparently, cents?
Yeah, heroin was taking over everybody. You know, remember everybody was that grunge kind of made heroin the chic drug, so nobody was doing coke.
Oh.
Yeah, that's 100% fact. Mail order bride was $72,000, a big spike in cost in that because of all the wives Donald Trump had. Black market babies were $1,200 on average, depending on where they came from. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, your first three DWIs were free.
Really? That's awesome.
Yeah. So 96 was a great year, unless you wanted to get a mail order bride.
I didn't know you could get a Bow 3 on a DUI, a BOGO.
Yeah, that stopped shortly. It was a failed program. It was like kind of one of those things like, let's make people responsible for themselves. But
I have a feeling that DWI or DUI or whatever lawyers, I think that their revenues have gone down because of my Uber driving. What do you think?
Yeah. A quick side note. It is weird that people seem to be more willing to use Uber and Lyft than they ever were a cab, and it's just as hard to get either one.
Oh, bullshit. They show up right away. Cabs, you got to wait a long time.
Break.
You got to make a phone call. You got to talk to a human. They show up. You don't know what you're going to get.
The cabs have apps, too.
They're yellow. I think it's the fact that you just get different colored cars. People don't like the yellow cars.
Well, you think the fact that they're licensed, bonded, and you're less likely to get raped or murdered would be a selling point, but they don't seem to be pushing that. I think I blame the cab companies for that.
Yeah, but like other things, you know all your fees up front. You know it's $10, and you might possibly be abducted, but a cab, you have no idea. It's like it could be $20, $25 depending on how they take you.
I stand with the union.
As usual. I also have to say that 1996 was the peak of Adam Sandler's talent. That was the and what I mean by that is he had both Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore in the books. And
yeah, I think largely accepted as his two best movies, right?
How could they not be?
Yeah, I don't know why. I've enjoyed his work, sporadically, dependent some better than others, obviously. Billy Madison, hands down, is my favorite.
Oh my god! But I like to have somebody that has a thesis that goes up there and just goes, "Grown Ups 2, easily the best, easily the best." No.
Yeah, to his credit, he hasn't done a lot of sequels.
All right.
He's like the Tom Cruise of boilerplate comedies.
Oh, he's done sequels. They're just not called sequels. They're the same fucking movie over and over again.
Oh, I got you.
Anyway.
I like the one where his wife is hot and Kevin James is disgusting.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. So, minimum wage, $4.75 an hour. Wow. I don't know if I'm about you, but I remember being working at Chili's. And making $6.75 an hour and fucking feeling like the king. You have no idea.
Man, in 1996 was the year I moved to the Twin Cities. I went from probably making around that $6.75 you were making to like $11.50.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, I was like suddenly like an upper class version of myself.
That's what I mean, right?
I bought a brand new, okay, not used, brand new neon. Dodge Neon, all mine, baby. Stick.
What color?
It was red.
I knew it. I knew you were a red neon man.
So how you want to segue into this episode, Luce?
Well, I think before we segue, I should mention that 2020 is the year of the rat. Also, 1996, also the year of the rat.
Let's see here. Hold on. That would mean we would have to have a divisible number of 12 between that year. And I'm just, know what? 24 works out.
Done. See? And that's the thing, man. 24 years ago. I mean, these were the we'll get into where we were, but I mean 24 years ago, we were just at the cusp, the beginnings of our overall killer careers and lives. Yes?
No shit.
I mean, did you think then where you'd be now at 53?
I'm still not. I still don't think about where I'm going to be at 53. No. I'll let you know when I get there, you fucking prick.
So in our 1991 episode, our only other 90s episode we've done on The Greatest Year of Rock, we covered the fact that we dispelled the myth that we've been told that three smelly guys from Seattle shot and killed Rock dead. So the reason I mention this is that 1996, one of the magazine covers were Soundgarden kills grunge dead. This was 1996 was kind of a transitional period where, you know, however you want to say grunge and trends were going out. It was kind of an interesting part time, just kind of like 91, where it was kind of moving towards maybe a little almost at nu metal. The grunge supposed fad had maybe worn down. Things were changing, would you not say?
Sure. I would compare it more to 1990 when there was kind of a mix of old and new. Okay. 91, things kind of got cemented. I get what you're going with that.
Yeah, because I think that looking back on this, that the albums...
It definitely was the last gasp for any real grunge at the time, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the last and the of the big, let's call it the big four or whatever.
Yeah, Nirvana was done because Cobain was dead. Soundgarden released probably their last, I don't know, decent record.
Yep.
And Alice in Chains was their last record this year too, with Lane, I should say.
Yes, this was the last. I think 95 was the actual self-titled, or it might have been.
The three-legged dog.
Did I fuck
one?
It up? Is the three-legged dog of this year or is it Unplugged? Fuck.
I think you were right. I think Unplugged was this year. So, yeah, we're probably a year after they even did their last thing. So, right. But as you know, we're always very tight on facts, so I'm sure we're right.
But, yeah, but then you've got new ones creeping up, which we'll get into. But,
yep.
Yeah, I think that 96 kind of teed up the 2000 era. Getting
yeah, very
close
much.
To it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So what you got? Would you like to go first? You have honors.
For my first pick, I'm going to kind of follow up what you're saying there as far as there kind of being like an in-between kind of movement thing. One of the bands that kind of latched on to a little bit of a grunge sound, but almost has a classic rock feel to them too, but kind of that mixture of alternative and how things kind of grew out of grunge to be more than just grunge, but it wasn't more that, it was still not typical mainstream pop rock or anything like that. It was a band, I believe, out of Chicago called Veruca Salt. Their first big hit was Seether, and that's probably their biggest song. They inspired the band Seether to name their band Seether. So I blame them for that. They're completely at fault for that. But, you know, I really did enjoy this band. Their first two full-length records, and the song I'm going to play today is off an EP that was released in between. The EP was called Blow It Out Your Ass, and this song is called Shimmer.
Setting the tone.
I should say that the full name of that song was Shimmer Like a Girl, but I don't know. Did you ever get into Veruca Salt much, Luce?
I had the Eight Arms to Hold You album.
That's the one with Volcano Girls on it?
Yep, that's my favorite song by them, and it's produced by Bob Rock, which is actually one of the selling points. You know, back in the day, you'd get a CD, you're like, I think I like this, but it's produced by XYZ, so I'm going to go for it, and that's what I did.
He definitely put the Bob Rock stamp on the guitar tone on that record.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't think as an album it was as good, but
nope.
I do love that song. But, you know, whatever. Never was one of my favorite bands, but I do have those three albums. So, And Nina Gordon released a solo album that was more like Lilith Fair kind of light alt-rock. Yeah. But there's a hit song in there called Tonight and the Rest of My Life that, I don't know, as a pop song, it's not too bad. Anyway, it's your pick. What do you got for us, 1996?
Well, sure. Well, obviously, the most important release of the year was the Poison Greatest Hits album that came out.
Ah, that might have been the first Poison CD I owned. Might have been the last one, too. Wait, I think I have Flesh and Blood. I'm not sure.
Well, the reason I mention this is that 96 in general, looking at this, was a year where a lot of artists put out greatest hits. You know?
Hair metal kind of came back. I remember
Right. Radio,
it was suddenly okay to talk about and listen to and enjoy stuff that for about basically 6 years was just a laughing stock. Winger never got out of that.
Right.
But no, like all of a sudden Poison was fun again. Cinderella released the greatest hits. Is that where you're going with this?
Pretty much. I mean, just a lot of them. Like, yeah, I forgot about the Cinderella, but they had that one too. They had the two girls on the cover that were in the videos, right?
Yeah.
But there were some of these older hair metal bands that were still trying to make themselves a little different. And Def Leppard was one of them with the album Slang.
I think they succeeded in making themselves different with that record.
I think so too. But, you know, Eddie Trunk always rates this as an underrated Def Leppard album. I will have to counter that and say it is perfectly rated.
It's rated as a dog, right? I mean, I don't know that I've actually sat through the whole thing. I can remember the title track, but not much else.
Boy, I over the years, I've been told you got it. This is the Def Leppard album that just got away, and I've gone back to it. I'm like, no, it did not get away. It was dead on arrival, man. This was just oof. I'm trying to think of anybody else to try to do that, but that they definitely were not going for the whole we're just going to keep on rocking deal.
I mean, it's the same thing with the Grim Reaper record, Rock You to Hell, and every time it just falls flat.
Did that come out this year, too? Okay.
No.
Damn it. Okay.
Anyway, so are you playing something off of Def Leppard? Did you see this tour? What'd you bring it up?
I'm just saying that was just the comparison of the Poisons and the greatest hits trying to cash in on the old. They're trying to push it forward and failing. But you also had, during this time, young upstarts out of Florida man Marilyn Manson on the scene.
Oh, that's right. He was just starting to cut through at this point.
Yeah, and we're not going to go too much, but the fact is that the Antichrist superstar was just finally hitting popular culture, hot off the heels of the Eurythmics cover, Sweet Dreams Are Made of This, and I am featuring the track Tourniquet.
Yeah!
Now, I know you've got next pick, Baco, but I do want to ask you if you owned a certain album that I'm fascinated with.
Yeah, what's that?
Deep Purple's release Perpendicular.
I saw that on the list and we went through. I don't remember that record at all. No, I never owned it.
Did you see the album cover?
I did not.
It's a purple album cover with a mic that is perpendicular, and it looks like a dick.
Nice.
Beautiful.
Perpendicular. That seems a little edgy for old Deep Purple, especially because they were old at that time.
Yeah. It sounds like that seems like a Blink 182
Deep
album.
Purple goes blue.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So, okay. Well, anyway, so that's not the pick you have, so proceed.
Yeah, I don't know if I didn't pick anything off that. Well, I'm going to pick something from the old guard regarding the grunge that we were talking about and the band specifically that you named. Soundgarden released their record Down on the Upside, a fairly, I don't know, I didn't like it as much as the others, but I still think it's a good record, I guess is the best way to put it. But I guess out of the records up to that point, from Loud Love to that record, I would say this is my least favorite of those. But I put it ahead of like the Screaming Life Fop EPs and stuff of that nature, their first Sub Pop releases. Yeah, you're a Soundgarden guy. Was this record something you got right away?
I did, and it was kind of not that bad for me too. The songs that I love on here are, you know, some of their best. Did you enjoy the rewrite of Black Hole Sun?
Which song are you talking about, man?
Blow Up the Outside World.
Oh, okay. I don't think that. I think it's a bit of a stretch.
All right. Well, to me, it's the same. It's the same damn song, man. Come on.
I don't know. Black Hole Sun is a timeless thing that it just captures like almost every part of that song just pops in a way that grabs you. I would not describe Blow Up the Outside World that way.
Well, that's where the rewrite is. It's the tomorrow of tonight of rock and roll night.
I prefer tomorrow and tonight.
Okay. Fair enough.
Probably more out of like fatigue, but
I'm more of a blow up the outside world guy myself.
Yeah, I haven't. Well, for me, it's far superior in every aspect. But the song I'm going to pick is, we typically try to kind of feature lesser known things, you know, kind of our cup of tea. This is not one of those tracks. This is one of the greatest songs of their career, if not my all time Soundgarden favorite. Every time I hear it, I never get sick of it. It is Burden in My Hand.
Follow me into the desert as thirsty as you are. Crack a smile and cut your mouth and drown in alcohol. Cause down below the truth is lying beneath the river bed.
To me, that is the pinnacle of a Chris Cornell vocal. I mean, he just follow me, but just and the music and the melody are just oh my god! It just left hand river sand. Just when he gets into that, God, see, just thinking about listening to it, it's got my hairs standing up. It's a killer track. It it blows away the rest of the album. That's for sure.
Well, it kind of gets that's what I mean. Like it's there, and it's almost clouded by the rest of the album.
I think to your point, I believe there was like a few year period where I just hadn't listened to that record,
right?
And then that song came on the radio, and I'm like, how the fuck am I not listening to this more often? You know what I mean?
Yep.
And then I listened to that record again, and I was like, that's why. I'm gonna make a jam CD to keep in the car.
I just think the most impressive thing is how the on the chorus they're able to take a bird in the hand is better than two in the bush and make it just flow.
Zing. Insert Camaro laugh.
That's definitely Camaro laugh worthy.
All right. Well, you know, enough about my pick. What's Loose Cannon going to throw at us from The Greatest Year in Rock, 1996?
Boy. All right. You know, when I prepare for these Greatest Year in Rocks episode, Greatest Year in Rocks. The Greatest Year in Rocks. This year. Name some rocks.
Abalone.
Is that a rock?
I don't think so. That's the first thing I came up to mind.
God, we're not good even at
pearls.
You know, as podcasters, we should be really good at earth science. Don't you think that would be like?
Oh, yeah. We should start our own geology podcast. Why? Because geology rocks.
Ooh.
Insert Camaro laugh.
Anyway, so I looked down here and I was like, okay, this is a band that I wrote down. I'm like, I'm definitely going to feature a song by them. But there's certain times that these albums don't age well. And that is Rage Against the Machine.
Album came out in 96? Was this the Battle for Los Angeles? Or
no, this was actually the...
Evil Empire.
Evil Empire, that's right. There's our second one. And and I remember liking this, but man, I went back to it and it's...
Is this the Pocket Full of Shells record?
I think so. That's down Rodeo. Yeah, down Rodeo Drive, and it has Bulls on Parade. Those are the two main ones. But anyway, so I was a big Rage fan. I mean, Lollapalooza was basically Rage opening, Alice in Chains closing, and that made my day. I immediately went out and bought that album. I liked the Battle of Los Angeles, but this one, man, I think we've had this discussion before too, where you like the band itself, but we're not a fan
the singer and his vocal styling, Zach De La Rocha. It just doesn't do it for me. He almost everything about that guy is the antithesis of what I want.
Right.
You know, he grinds my gears, but great band. And there are some songs I like by them. I actually own a couple of their records, but you know,
this is
back
not
to your point.
This is an absolute sophomore slump. I mean, I also think that's notable in 1996 is Sublime put out a very popular song called Date Rape.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that it was the paths were cleared by Nirvana with Rape Me and it kind of evolved from there?
You know, I don't know. That's kind of the song is not pro rape.
I'm aware of that. Neither of them are. Do you think both of them are saying...
No, I know, but yeah, I mean, look...
The guy ends up in hell. It's a cautionary tale.
That's when things got out of control. She didn't want to. He had his way. She said, let's go. He said, no way. Come on, babe, it's your lucky day. Shut your mouth, we're gonna do it my way. Come on, baby, don't be afraid. If it wasn't for date rape, I'd never get laid. Sad. In my opinion, you weren't half bad. She picked up a rock, threw it in the car, hit him in the head, and he's got a big scar. Come on, party people, listen to me. Date rape, Styli. The next day, she went to her drawer.
looked up her local attorney at law, went to the phone and filed a police report, and then she took the guy's ass to court. Well, the day he stood in front of the judge, he screamed, "She lies, that little slut!" The judge knew he was full of shit, and he gave him 25 years, and now his heart is filled with tears. One night in jail, it was getting late, he was butt raped by a large inmate, and he screamed, but the guards paid no attention to his cries. That's when things got out of control. The moral of the day-bred story, it does not pay to be drunk and horny, but that's the way it had to be. They locked him up and threw away the key. Well, I can't take pity on men of his kind, even though he now takes it in the behind. That's the way it had to be. They locked him up and threw away the key. Well, I can't take pity on men of his kind, even though he now takes it in the behind.
Yeah, so here's a band where the lead singer died before they got famous, Bradley Nowell, and they are still doing a, apparently they're still a viable commodity because whatever version of them still exists today at every fest.
Weird, cause they have to say like Sublime featuring Rome.
Some dude.
His name is Rome. Oh. And who I've actually seen him perform on TV, but I don't know who the guy is. But the family sued to make sure that was done. That was a stipulation. Or there was at least some discussion. It might have been as simple as, like, we don't want you to do this. And they said, can we do it like this? And they might have said, fine. I don't know if it actually went to litigation or not.
Yeah. Well, they're still out there. You know, Danny Wimmer.
Playing the two songs you all remember.
That's right. Here we go.
The Bret Michaels hit What I Got.
That's right. We have featured Sublime before, in a way.
Yeah, real simple like that. Early in the morning, rise up to the street. Light me up that cigarette, and I strap shoes on my feet. Got to find a reason.
All right. So what you got? What's next? Moving on from...
Oh, man. Who do I want to do next? Well, one thing that was kind of like... You can give Nine Inch Nails all the credit for starting with kind of industrial rock, but that was kind of developing into like almost a more of a hybrid that was a little more founded in metal than Nine Inch Nails, I would say, was. And one of the bands that had a nice little one-hit pop during this time was Gravity Kills. And they had a song that I still think is kind of fun to listen to, and that was called Guilty. You know, I don't have anything else to say about them. What's up with you, Luce?
That's great. Okay.
I literally know nothing about the band. I never bought the record or anything. So,
all right, Paco, what other pop culture information do you have for the listeners?
Well, one of the things you've brought up in past episodes was the movies of the year, and it was always fun to count down. And you know, although I will say, so far into this episode, it seems like I have got my libido and self love under control. I haven't mentioned masturbating once yet, so maybe the movies will do it for us. But,
this was 10 years after you'd calmed down a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm no longer, you know, I'm in my mid 20s at this point, so
sure.
I you know, I'm just a, you know, manscaping and all the time. But,
you're just grooming yourself.
Yeah, I got the. Why don't we count down from the top 20 movies? We'll do 20 to 11 right now. You ready?
Okay. All right. Yeah.
At number 20 was the Richard Gere thriller, Primal Fear, with a young Edward Norton in it. I saw this in the theater.
I did. I saw this as well. Quite a twist ending.
Yes, a twist. Mm-hmm. I've never fucking heard of this movie. It's got Minnie Driver and Campbell Scott in it. Big Night.
Nope.
Okay. The Frighteners?
Oh, is this the one with Michael J. Fox?
Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, that was a weird one. It was like half. It was kind of like Ghostbusters, half comedy, half horror.
Yeah, okay. It says fantasy comedy.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right.
No.
Never saw it. You did?
I did. It's all right. It's okay.
Horror movies suddenly became a thing again, like something that would actually get people to the movie theater. Scream, the Wes Craven movie, of course, with Nev Campbell, David Arquette. I love Wes Craven. I've always been a horror movie fan. I don't care how bad they are.
You don't care. You'll see Pumpkinhead.
As a matter of fact, listeners, go to YouTube, look up the movie Crimson Ghost from 1946. And watch the colorized version movie because it's only an hour and a half instead of 2.5 hours. But it's brutally brilliant. Anyway, but I loved Scream. I thought it was great.
Oh, I loved it too. I'm actually surprised that that's where it ranked because it was such a big deal how much that movie made.
Pop culture wise, I think it's got a much higher rating than most of these. This is just strictly box office.
Yes, so. No, I agree. I'm just surprised on the ranking. But great movie. All right.
And we got some ranch fried potatoes with Sling Blade coming in at 16.
Oh,
Billy Bob Thornton suddenly becomes something we think about.
He does. And Angelina, he bags Angelina Jolie in a few years. Sling Blade does.
Yeah, no doubt. This was a pretty solid movie. I didn't think I'd like it, but after it got all this, it basically became one of those movies you had to see at a certain point.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah. All right, at 15, another movie I've never heard of featuring Gwyneth Paltrow, Hard Eight.
Jesus. Okay, no.
16 wow. At 14 is Secrets and Lies. I don't know any of these actors, so
nope.
I'm guessing. A Lone Star with, again, Chris Cooper and Elizabeth Peña.
Jesus Christ, these movies are not classics.
Yeah, we're getting to them, though. This is a one that's a very quotable, probably the most quotable Tom Cruise movie ever, Jerry Maguire.
Wow. Okay. Again, I would think this is a top 10 one. Okay. But does it say the box office at all next to it?
This does not have the numbers on the list I got. I'm sorry.
All right. Go ahead.
My apologies. I'll do better next time, Lewis. Don't hit me. And rounding out the top or the bottom 20, whatever, 20 to 11, at number 11 is Swingers, which brought us Vince Vaughn.
Yep.
And, they don't list him here, but what's his name? The guy who's got his hand in everything now, Favreau.
Yeah, he's in the Mandalorian and everything now.
Yeah, I mean, so he's more behind the scenes than in front of the camera now. But, yeah, he's this is basically his launching point. But Swingers, a movie, I'm going to go on record and hot take here, man, does not hold up.
Nope. I didn't think
the best thing about
then.
It is the scene where they're playing Sega and they make Gretzky bleed.
All I know is that even when I saw this, I was like, I don't get it. But you notice that this is another one that says money. Two in a row almost. That you're so money, show me the money, and you're so money was a big word in box office that year.
And we have this fucking movie to thank for the whole swing band movement with the cherry poppin' daddies and all that fucking garbage. But did not ever get into that. I was just like I had friends who were like, oh man, this fucking I don't know, whatever. Anyway, there you go. We'll hit the next top 10 in the part two. But let's get back to the picks. It's your pick, Luce. What do you got?
So I'm going to feature a band that I didn't get into the last couple of years. And one of the reasons was from hearing that it was quite an influence on the lead singer of Volbeat. His name, Michael Poulsen. That's his name. Lead singer. He has Social Distortion is one of his tattoos in his arm and one of his singing styles that he uses.
Yeah, definitely influenced by those guys. Yeah.
Okay. And I'd always known the song I Was Wrong. It was one of my... always is on one of my playlists, but it's the only song I ever had by them. But then I went back to that album, White Light, White Heat, White Trash, And there's another great song on that album, too. It's a great album overall, but this is my second favorite, and that's Don't Drag Me Down. So, question for you, Claudia Schiffer, would you?
Sure, even now, why not?
What about Margot Hemingway?
No, never.
Well, she's dead. She was dead that year from an overdose of phenobarbital, just so you know.
Hmm. Nice.
Ted Kaczynski.
Unabomber?
Yeah, would you?
You know, in his college years, maybe. Oh, yeah. He really let himself go.
That's true. You're not into the hood look?
No, it was more the beard. You know, it's like, you know, get some beard oil or something, trim it up, you know, like.
Yeah, he's getting to kind of
have some self-respect.
Yeah, he used Tom Araya for a picture to guide himself with. What do you think?
Oh man, yeah.
Tico Mi Amo.
Did that come out in 96?
Yeah, it did.
I had the dollar store version of it. Don't touch me there, Eddie.
Hmm. Used for different purposes, I believe, in therapy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. His family dollar. So.
Also, come on. I'm not sure if you know this, but 96, 24 years we can thank. For 24 years, we have been doing this at weddings and awkward social events, and that's the Macarena.
Oh, that's too bad.
Oh, by the way, one other thing I want to let you know about, though, Baco, is, and you should be really happy about this, this was the year that Oprah started her famous book club.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Now you got me horny.
There is no need for self-love.
You're a big book guy, right? A lot of books you read that year?
Yeah. Did Da Vinci Code come out that year? Because I did read that.
Okay.
That might have been the last non-rock biography I read. I used to read some John Grisham. He had to have a fucking book out in that year.
He was alive, so yes, he did. That was the Runaway Jury was that year. I read
that. Did not read it. Cusack movie.
Yeah, it was in that, but you also had one thing you could say if you want to impress people is say, like, hey, I'm into Stephen King. I read The Green Mile. Just the first one. Do you remember that? They came out in the little 50-page books, one by one. They were like a serial thing. They would come out every week.
No, I had no idea.
No? Okay. Also, this is the year that It Takes a Village by Hillary Clinton came out.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's pretty much a roadmap for my life is like I ignore all the advice in that book. So it is an advice book, right?
That's right. No, the original title was It Takes a Village to Hide the Evidence from All the People I've Killed.
No shit, it takes a village.
It does. A lot of shovels. No?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You can't, you know, or a backhoe. That was with it. That's what that was the second title. It takes a village or a backhoe.
All right.
Yeah, because a village, you get 20 people with shovels. A backhoe can do the same work in 10 minutes.
Good. How many people are they accused of killing to further their lives? All those conspiracy
things? I don't know,
plenty.
Epstein's the latest one, right?
Who is?
Epstein.
Oh, yeah, Epstein, too. I can see that.
He's got dirt on Trump and dirt on Clinton, apparently. But only Clinton is suspected of killing him. You know, go figure. But
sure.
He was on Saturday Night Live this last weekend.
Was he? Oh, Epstein was? Oh, yeah, I did see that.
He was in hell. Yeah.
Oh, he was in hell. A lot of people were in hell. I did see that. That's pretty good.
What did he say? Because they said the devil appears to people in different forms. He says the devil appears to him as a woman his age. Not a bad joke for Saturday Night Live.
No. No, not at all. But, man.
They asked him what he was doing there, and he's like, just hanging. Anyway, enough about the current Saturday Night Live.
We've gone, that's the wrong year of the rat. So is it my pick?
No, it's mine.
Okay. You have honor, sir. Continue.
I'm going to go with something that was a new band at this time. And you know what? I think probably a first for me. I'm playing two songs by artists that have a female singer, at least. The other one, I guess, yeah, they're both mixed between men and women in the bands, and both of them. This is another one-hit wonder band. I liked the CD okay, but this song I still think is pretty catchy. And it's the band Republica with the song Ready to Go. Once again, that was Republica with Ready to Go. And once again, it's an artist I know nothing about. So what's your pick what do you got next, Luce?
Yeah, at least I'm throwing some out there like you. I know nothing about Sublime.
Except, I know the singer's dead and he had a Dalmatian that he malnourished.
That's try Dalmatian. There you go. Perfect. Yeah, he loved that Dalmatian. That's
love
all we
it
know
so much, that thing fucking never got fed, other than fucking pot smoking stale beer.
Oof. Jeez, we are just shitting on this guy's legacy. That's not good.
Little known fact, Dalmatians are a very inbred dog.
Oh, yes, they are. They are very popular that this year, too. This was the year, by the way. Just we'll get into that in the next episode in case you're on the edge of your seat about the Dalmatian craze of 1996. But there was one, and we'll tell you why. You have to come back for that. So anyway, so it's my next pick is, you know, kind of like we were talking about, the 1996 was kind of a turning point with bands. One band that kind of, I don't know if they completely changed it, but they definitely showed another side to them, was Stone Temple Pilots with the album, the longest title. I'm going to see if I can get this right. Tiny Songs from the Vatican? Is that accurate?
Tiny Music from the Vatican Gift Shop.
There you go. Perfect. And when Big Bang Baby came out first, it had this really lo-fi video, and it kind of looked like, you know, it was filmed with somebody's, you know, it was just, it was.
I still remember that kind of creepy backwards walk Weiland does at the end of it.
Yeah, and I was like, I don't know if I like this or not, but that's one of my favorite songs by them.
Yeah, it's a killer track.
Yeah, but
nice little off-time riff to go against the kind of beat.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah.
I think this album, they took themselves next level, big time.
I think so. You know, it's probably not my favorite record by them, nope. But it is a good album.
Yeah, and the song I'm going to feature is actually one of where they showed kind of their, I think it's a great Lost Beatles track, and that is the track Lady Picture Show. Little fun fact, I was supposed to see the Stone Temple Pilots in Louisville that year, but something changed. We'll get into that next episode.
Okay. That's two teasers in a row, man.
I know. It's a lot of teasers. You got Dalmatians and a Stone Temple Pilots.
But I cannot wait.
I know. I mean, come on. But did you ever see Weiland with STP?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, a few times.
Really?
Yeah.
What year? Like in this zone?
Oh, boy. Well, yeah, I saw them. Shoot. Just trying to think here. It was the, no, the tour before this one. What was that record called?
Purple.
Yeah, no, I saw him a few times. The last couple, he was not very good, but.
Yeah, he was all kind of zonked out at this time. Purple hair and used the, what's the thing you use for crowd control all the time? Like the
bullhorn?
But he used a lot, way too much of the bullhorn, like instead of the microphone. So, Baco, moving on from Stone Temple Pilots and a bullhorn, what do you have in your neck of the woods?
You want my next pick for the greatest year in rock?
I do.
1996, Motorhead released a record called Overnight Sensation. Still one of my favorite Motorhead records. Kind of underrated. CMC was a record label that I think eventually became Spitfire. But anyway, they were like this home for a lot of these like older artists.
Yep.
Like even like Lynyrd Skynyrd was on them, and they would still sell a decent amount of records. But they kind of managed things a little bit differently. But I'm going to play a song on here that's it's a bit of an epic tune, so you're going to have to kind of snip it down where you want to put it. But
sure.
It's a track called I Don't Believe a Word.
I gotta tell you, Baco, I have been diving into the Motorhead catalog over the last couple of years. This was one that wasn't available. It was kind of hard to find. You know what I mean?
Okay.
To listen to it. And I finally listened to it after I saw it was on your
the music collection that you rent every month didn't have it?
No, they didn't. They didn't have the rights yet. But now they do.
Okay. Well, that's good. And, it's a good record.
Yeah. And you know, it's also notable for the first time you see Lemmy without his mutton chops. And it's a
I never thought about that. Yeah, I don't know if it's the first time, but yeah, that's definitely a notable point.
Well, they've only been the album cover twice, I think, and that's Ace of Spades and this one. Actually, you know, it's usually their logo on the album cover.
Yeah, sure, I get where you're going. Yep.
But my God, this song and the title track and
Civil War.
That's great. What's one of the there's something with the fox.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a real rocket.
Is it just Crazy Like a Fox?
Crazy Like a Fox, which is like more of a straight up rock and roll song. And the there's some acoustic guitar in here. There's some he plays the harmonica. It's a pretty diverse. I mean, you know, for Motorhead, it's very diverse.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know if it was this summer or the following, but I saw Motorhead for the first time, and it was at an outdoor festival, and I was blown away. It just how great they were. I think I've told the story, but when I first saw them inside, I was like, oh, this is, whew, it's just too loud.
Yeah.
It it works outdoor.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, so, you know, God bless you, Lemmy. Thank you for everything. And what do you got for your next pick, or the last pick of this episode, I suppose?
Yes.
How are we going to wrap up part one of The Greatest Year in Rock, 1996, Luce?
We're going to play my track of the year, and that is Dalmatian Wyland. I'm sorry. Hold on. That's actually just more of a tease. So let's go. Ooh. You know what? We were talking off mic a little bit that in 94, you know, Tarantino hit Hollywood and put out Pulp Fiction, and subsequently Dust Till Dawn. He could pretty much put out anything. And did you see Dust Till Dawn?
I not at the time, no. I've okay. seen it, yes.
It's okay at best, would you say? Yes?
Well, Salma Hayek makes it worth it, right?
Oh, that one scene, of course.
Now we're jerking off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, finally, getting it back.
Little
vampire action, little place in the middle of the desert. You know,
by 96, I didn't need to do it in the theater. I could just spank bank it, hit it when I had some free time before I went to bed.
Sure. Very well organized and more options. And for those not familiar, it's a vampire movie starring George Clooney. And for some odd reason, fucking Tarantino himself decides to put himself on screen.
Yeah, but he gets killed pretty quick, so that's all right.
Thank God. But
you know, it's also got Selma Hayek's tits.
Oof, yes, as we've already covered. But
I just wanted to talk about it again, apparently.
This soundtrack is pretty badass.
It's a good soundtrack.
It's a good soundtrack, and that kind of started the whole thing where you would buy the soundtrack just because Tarantino kind of put together like Kill Bill and things like that. And he kind of lost his mojo along the way, I think. But overall, he puts together a pretty badass score. And one of them was the first time I'd heard... And it's not this song I'm going to feature because it's from an old album, but there's two songs by ZZ Top on the soundtrack. And one of them is an old one called Mexican Blackbird, which is off of Fandango and is one of my favorite ZZ Top songs. But because it falls out of the parameters, is also off of ZZ Top's album Rhythmine, which I never owned, but it is released in 1996. And that is the track She's Just Killing Me. So I did want to just throw out a little bit about Tarantino. I mean, 94 and 96, okay. This is the zone where kind of cinema kind of flashed back to the whole, I don't know, let's just call it Scorsese, more independent, more, at least it wasn't just all
there was a lot of big ones, you're right. I mean,
right?
even a little bit after this with things like American Beauty and that kind of stuff were kind of started during this time.
Yeah, and it was a good thing for either you love Tarantino or not. At least you didn't get the same.
Pulp Fiction blew me away the first time I saw it. I mean,
right?
It was unreal. I've never seen a movie done that way before. That was that well written, and the characters were so fleshed out. And flat out, I'm sorry, Travolta's the reception Travolta got for that performance. Way overrated. He's good in it. I like it, but they acted like this guy, like, we have no idea who he is. I don't know. Bruce Willis destroyed in that movie. He was the best performer, but
oh, everybody else was great.
Ving Rhames. Oh, how about what's his name? Harvey Keitel.
Yeah.
My God, the Wolf. Fuck yeah.
But honestly,
I think what's his nuts? Travolta. The most unlikable, boring character of all the main ones.
Well, of course. Sam Jackson made the movie.
Well, right. He kind of hit his... That was his first, like, real...
Yeah, that was when he went from...
I'm going to say motherfucker all the time, motherfucker!
That's right. Exactly. I mean, you got it. I mean, who...
Without that movie, there's no Snakes on a Plane.
Oh.
And there's no What's in Your Wallet.
No. Exactly. No, that was the movie. I mean, I remember being just shocked with so many parts of that movie, from the gimp to the gun going off.
Gimp! Oh my God, that blew me away.
I was like, what is going on in this movie?
I remember I was watching it. I went to the movie with like Wilson, and he was like really uncomfortable with the gimp. Like he's like. I don't understand the point of bringing what was the gimp. Does this guy just live in this box? I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, man, let it go.
Because shit is gonna get even worse. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, my God.
The fact that you can make a conversation interesting about somebody eating a burger. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that whole
again, fun scene. Overrated. Maybe that was because it's the only thing they could actually play a clip from on like fucking, you know, Regis and Kathy Lee.
True.
You know, that's kind of my theory, but like Royale with cheese is not that interesting to me. It was funny. It was good. I would not take it out, but there is so much better dialogue.
Yeah, but it really brought the metric system into the U.S.
Well, Tarantino tried, people. He tried.
He tried. But no, in general, I do have something to say is how is Harvey Keitel dressed in a tuxedo at 10 a.m. in the morning? What is he doing?
I love that. I love those oddities about that movie, though.
Yeah, nothing really makes sense, but it makes sense, is what you're saying. Yeah? Just like...
Oh, yeah. I had the exact same thought. It's like, what the fuck is this guy doing in a tux?
I still think I remember I recall vividly that I was at the theater in more than a horror movie or anything else, when they were talking and they were yelling and arguing in the car, and all of a sudden the gun goes off and blows that kid's head off, and the blood goes everywhere. I was like, oh, shit! I did not expect that.
I laughed out loud and might have been the only person.
All right, well, that ends the Tarantino portion of 1996. So as a reminder, we're going to feature She's Just Killing Me by ZZ Top. But you want to get out of here until part two?
Absolutely. You ready, Luce?
I am. Rock's not dead.
But if it is, Hillary Clinton had nothing to do with it. He was a fan of the bullhorn, that Weiland.
Love the bullhorn. That's what it says on his grave.
All right.
Go ahead.
Maybe a little more delicately kick it to me. Jesus, fuck. Well, one thing, when we get into the songs, we can move a little quicker if we just kind of like move. But yeah, set me up, man. Jesus.
You want a better setup than he loved the bullhorn in his grave?
No, I want a better setup than, ha 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 ha. Go ahead.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.